through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
The 0-2 on the way, swing and a miss for strike three, and there is Justin Dunn's first strikeout in the big leagues. He strikes out Dario Agrizol and gets out of the bottom half of the second. A strikeout for Justin Dunn, and that should do it for Dunn tonight here in Pittsburgh. Way to go, kid.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. It's our pleasure to be joined by Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn. Justin, how are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What was your first year with the Mariners like last year?
It was amazing. I guess plain and simple, dream come true. I'm blessed and fortunate enough to be able to achieve my childhood dream of pitching in a major league stadium. So I'm very thankful for that and thankful for the opportunity.
So you're New York born and raised, I'm seeing from your Twitter profile. How's it been being on the West Coast?
It's different, but I love it. Everybody that asks me about Seattle, I say it's beautiful. It reminds me of a very, like a smaller New York City, more compact. So I love it a lot, feel right at home.
Did you like seeing snow this year then? You're like, oh, I'm recognizing some of the cold of New York.
Yeah. Like I heard it was going to be cold and I got off the plane and I was like, no.
What? It's freezing.
No, this isn't bad. This is shorts and t-shirt back home.
Oh, no.
This is shorts and t-shirt back home?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. See, I'm used to people making fun of Seattleites for saying that. Like it gets to 60 and we're like, yeah, what a beautiful day. But this being shorts and t-shirt weather is.
Oh, yeah. Shorts and t-shirt, maybe some sweats.
That's tough even for me. Props to you, Justin.
Thank
you. So what have you been doing this off season to prepare for spring training?
I've been down in Florida working out at Cressy Sports Performance. Lift, throw my bullpens, run, do all that stuff, and then get to hang out, play some golf, kind of de-stress a little bit.
Who are you hanging out with when you hang out?
So my roommate is my college roommate, Mike King. We've been doing this for 3 years now since we first got drafted, so finish around 12, go hang out at the beach if it's a nice day. If not, go play some golf and eat good and go to bed.
It must be nice to have a familiar face out there, though, especially with all the changes that are happening in your professional life, to have some kind of constant, whether it's, like you said, your old college roommate and friend being out there. But are you building any of those relationships with some teammates?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have a very close team as well, especially in Arkansas. We were all very tight. So Evan White, Kyle Lewis, Jake Fraley, I mean, we talk almost every day. Lopesy, Braden, Festa was down at Cressy with me, so we spoke a lot. I mean, I'm pretty close with a lot of people, but it's good to share it.
Yeah.
Are you a really good golfer?
No, I'm terrible.
You're terrible? Like, what are we talking? What's your handicap?
To the point I don't keep score.
Oh, you don't keep score at all?
To the point where you're like, I don't need to talk about it.
Yeah. I look good. I look really good getting out of the car.
That's most of what matters.
Getting out of the car.
Getting out of the car, I look really good.
Wait, you don't drive the cart?
No, I'm just talking about walking up to the course.
Got it.
Look like I belong.
Look
gotcha.
Professional.
As soon as I take a swing, I have no business being there.
I completely empathize.
Yeah,
That's how it is.
I guess I'm a little better than that, but I probably don't look as good getting out of the car.
That's the thing. It's a give and take.
I'll help you out.
You can help them just get the golf style ready.
100%.
The immediate impact. Because what you want to do is you want to intimidate the people you're golfing with.
Yes.
Before you even start.
What are your some of your personal expectations for this season?
It's a good question. I guess first and foremost, I just want to be here all year. I want to step foot here and then not leave. So that's my big goal for myself. And then whatever happens from there happens. I just want to be myself, control my emotions, really show the fan base, show the team who I am as a pitcher. I didn't really get a chance to do that last year. I was a little erratic in the strike zone, but mainly just attack the zone, attack hitters, and show that I belong here and that I deserve to stay.
What did you do this offseason to kind of focus on correcting some of that? Just extra work or anything specific with anyone?
No, I think a lot of it last year was nerves, to be honest with you. Yeah. My heart rate was kind of crazy every game. But yeah, made a couple mechanical adjustments, sent some video to Woody. So we've been talking a lot almost every week. Every bullpen I throw, I send them video and we're talking and try to figure out what we got to do to clean some things up, get a little more consistent. But I feel good. I'm really happy with where I'm at right now and excited to go showcase it in camp.
We're talking to Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn. Does the team at times, do they kind of leave you alone to figure it out? on your own, or are they all over you with your mechanics, that sort of thing? Like, what's the interaction between you and the team?
For me personally, the more you hound me, the more it gets in my head.
Yeah.
And then the more mental it becomes than physical. I'm a very big, like, feel person. So once I can get the feel, I can repeat it a bunch of times. But the more information that gets thrown, my head starts to wander, and I can't really lock in on the one thing that I need to do. So building the relationship with Woody last year, he knows me like the back of my hand, like the back of his hand now too. So he kind of knows my little verbal cues on what to say, what not to say. And then Skip was really big last year and just getting out of my own head. Just step back, understand it's the same game, and just go out and be myself. So they were awesome this year, and I was really fortunate.
So some folks love this question. Some athletes hate it. But it's a big time of change that a lot of Mariners fans are seeing, and there's going to be an influx of a lot of new faces and new guys that they aren't quite familiar with yet. So how would you first just describe yourself as a player for the fans that maybe haven't seen a lot of you yet?
High energy. I love to be on the field. Whenever I'm playing, you're getting 110%. I hate to lose more than I like to win. So just know whenever I'm out on the field, I'll run through a wall for somebody. I'm giving you all my heart, everything I got, until I can't go anymore. Like to have fun when the exciting moments happen. I'll probably be one of the first three people on the field. With Lou, I kind of know how to talk to Lou and get him hyped up for the big situation. So I just try to be a good teammate and be there for everybody and learn what everybody likes to do, and so that I can be there in their times of needs.
We were just listening to Andy McKay talk about Jared Kelenic and how confident a guy he is, whether he's going up against major league pitching or whoever. If you're down there and you're facing, say, Mike Trout or one of the superstars of the game, is that intimidating, or are you saying, you know what, I can get this guy out?
See, that's the fun stuff for me.
Yeah.
Because that's where you can see where you stack up. That's one of the greats right there. I mean, we throw Mike Trout out there. That's a Hall of Famer, basically. I mean, there's not much more he needs to do for that. So to go out there and be able to go fight against him, I mean, that's the way I see it. It's a fist fight. We're both fighting for food on our table. So to see how I stack up against some of the game's best only builds my confidence and helps me throughout my career.
How was that Mariners Care Tour? I've seen some videos of you
awesome.
With some kids at the hospital. How was that?
Awesome. It's a pretty cool moment whenever you get to put smiles on kids' faces, especially when they're going through some really hard times, and kind of puts things into perspective for you, even just knowing how blessed and how fortunate we are to be in this situation. So anytime you can put a smile on somebody's face, I love it.
Was that your first time doing it?
First one, yeah.
Yeah?
First one.
Wow.
We hear you're into shoes, sneakers, etc.
Where'd you hear this from?
Describe.
That got around quick, huh? Yeah, I'm a big sneakerhead.
What are you wearing right now?
Jordan
oh, whoa.
Sixes. Yeah.
Okay.
So
wow.
I pulled these out of the Rolodex for you guys because I figured people were going to ask me about it, so I had to bring out something a little crazy.
The
I'm
Rolodex.
Hoping this was just for us, and not by you guys. You mean like a media day?
No, just for you. I brought it out just
the two of us.
Yeah.
I need to take a picture of this stuff.
But I have close to 250 pairs of sneakers.
250 pairs of sneakers. You know what, though? Everybody's got to have something
that's my advice.
That they're
things.
Into.
Everyone
you know what I mean?
It.
Whether it's shoes or music or art or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, my mom gets mad at me, but I tell her it could be worse. I could be into cars or jewelry or more expensive
this
things.
It's much more affordable.
But those are pretty expensive, too.
Yeah, sometimes.
But it's not a car or jewelry.
Well, right, but you're not going to have 200 cars.
Is there anyone that matches your level of being a sneakerhead? Anyone that comes close?
Kyle's got some heat in his closet.
Ooh.
Last year I saw D pull some stuff out that I didn't even have.
Did you see that and think, okay, I've got to step my game up?
Yeah. I've always been the one to kind of see stuff. Even with my little brother, I used to buy him shoes. And kids would like come to school and be like, well, I got these. And I'd be like, okay, well, we're going to go to the store and we're going to pick something up
that's
that tops
cute,
that
but...
and say, go find your parents and see if you can top this one, because there's always another level. So
you've always been really into like shaming people.
No,
that's
not
cool.
Shaming. It's not shaming. Not shaming. But it's a competition to
yeah.
me. I love to compete.
Yeah.
Like I said, I hate to lose in everything. In life. So I never want to be outdone. So I try to find something special.
That's awesome.
Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn, it's been great to have you here. I know for a fact that Mariner fans are absolutely going to love having you here for the foreseeable future.
Thank you. I can just
tell by talking to you, you've just got that thing that people are going to latch on to.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You got some heat in your closet, Stacey?
Yeah, I have a pretty good shoe game. Just I don't know if they're shoes that you guys would envy.
When did grown men become, I don't know, obsessed with shoes?
Some people like style.
They do?
Yeah.
But shoes were never really, like, mm-hmm. like sneakers.
What?
Were never really part of
it. I feel like they've been a big part of it like since I was little.
With a Jordan brand? I think yeah. Jordan became the first guy to become an iconic. Yeah. Those are the Jordan shoes this year. And now, I mean, what was he? Well, these are the Jordan 6s. I also have Jordan 10s.
But even
Jordan
before
1s.
Then, like, really nice dress shoes used to be impressive.
Oh, dress shoes.
Oh,
sure,
nice penny
yeah.
loafer?
Yeah.
Woo.
I'm just talking about the sneaks.
The sneaks? I feel like they've been important since I was a wee lass.
Yeah, but that was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. Mm.
Yeah, so that's how long they've been important. We answered
yeah,
the question.
Exactly. I'm 2 years. Pretty sure I said it.
2 years. Well, either way, very excited about Justin Dunn and what's at stake. What the future holds for Justin Dunn. I think he's going to be a great guy for all the Mariner fans to sort of just accept, embrace as a great personality here.
Mm-hmm. And can I also just tell you, as an aside, this has nothing to do with Justin Dunn and everything to do with our text line blowing up for people telling me where I can find wild turkeys in Washington State.
Oh, really?
An unexpected fallout of our interview with Tom Murphy.
Well, where can you go?
Yeah, what they say, Eastern Washington,
someone
I imagine.
Someone said Oregon, Canyonville, Oregon. Someone else said, where's this place in Washington? They said it in all caps. I got to find it. I don't know. There's a couple places in Washington. I've never seen a turkey in my entire life. A living one.
Yeah, I'm telling you, in Connecticut, you're driving along, you know, the country roads, and then they just, you'll see a line of them, five or six of them, walking across the road. You just got to stop and wait for them.
Are you sure they're turkeys and not pigeons?
Stacey, we're positive. We got it covered.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. What are you looking forward to most with the Mariners this year?
The debut of any MLB debuts.
Any MLB debuts?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to first home runs, like Evan White, first home runs. Kyle Lewis last year, I thought that was really exciting. It's a little bit different in September than it is in April. Obviously, end of the year, it was kind of at a lost point in the season last year, but yeah, anything that has to do with, I guess, like you're saying, debuts, firsts, big moments like that. Jake is on the line. He's on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. So let's do four downs.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Stacey, which of their own players could or should the Seahawks re-sign?
So like I said, you've got a lot of guys leaving on both the defensive and offensive line. I think the two players I would really consider re-signing are first linebacker Michael Kendricks. I just think that Pete Carroll didn't make mention of leaving his kind of base defense idea. I think he likes it. There's some stuff that they're going to look to develop, and he said move forward in the offseason with a few things on defense, and that could include scheme. But I think with as much as they use their base defense, you need a veteran linebacker out there, someone you really trust. And it sounds like they really, really like Michael Kendricks. So I don't think he would be especially expensive, even if it was a short deal. Another guy I would consider is Quentin Jefferson, another guy who he might actually have some competitive deals on the free market, but he's a really, really versatile guy on your defensive line. You don't have a ton of tested depth there. It's certainly going to be an area you need to address in the draft, so I think it would help to have a veteran that can play both inside and outside.
Second down. Jake Heaps, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you? I'm a little jealous. You guys are Safeco. You guys are in T-Mobile Park. I mean, gosh, yeah, probably a pretty cool experience with everything you guys are hearing.
Yeah, it actually is a pretty cool experience. I mean,
you should be jealous.
I might still take Orlando in the good weather, but it's pretty good up here. Jake, how is the NFC Pro Bowl team reacting to the Seahawks coaching staff down there?
Yeah, it's actually really been a cool thing to kind of watch develop. Is you see Pete Carroll and his attitude and his mindset, and obviously we have been used to it and have been well accustomed to how Pete Carroll approaches practice, how he approaches meetings, just everything that he does. But for these players in the Pro Bowl, this is their first ever time outside of the Seahawks players and Russell Wilson and Shaq Griffin ever getting a chance to meet him and see him and see what it's like. And from the very beginning, they have been blown away by him, from the way that practice is being handled and the energy and tempo that's there. I mean, trust me, guys, Pro Bowl is usually a joke from that standpoint. And I'm not saying they're flying around and they're, you know, this is like a super competitive practice, but there's a different energy and feel. Pete Carroll bringing out the basketball hoops and team meetings and just getting the energy up, level up super high. And guys are blown away by Pete Carroll. And I've had the chance to talk to not just Russell and Shaq, and those two guys have said, these guys around us are going, are you kidding me? This is what this guy's like every single day. But I talked to about seven different players on the NFC Pro Bowl team, and they just told me, man, I would love to play for this guy. I would absolutely love to play for this guy. This wasn't an interview setting. This was more behind the scenes. And they, if they ever hit the free market, Seattle is going to be a place that they're going to try and figure out and see if they can get to. So this is absolutely a great opportunity for Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks organization, to really show this star-studded talent what they're all about. And it's really really been effective because these guys love this process and being around these coaches.
Third down. Jake, who's going to be the next Seahawk to make their first Pro Bowl?
Man, that is a really good question. I think right off the top, I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are two guys that should have a great opportunity to do it next year. I thought Tyler Lockett was on his way to make the Pro Bowl this year. Had that unfortunate injury, and I think that's ultimately what ended up holding him back from getting his second Pro Bowl nod as an actual receiver, not a special teams player. But the other one that I would keep an eye out for is Will Dissly. Will Dissly, before he got hurt, I thought he was on his way to having a Pro Bowl type season, and so unfortunate for him. Obviously, we've talked about his injury, but I think he's another guy, if he can remain healthy for an entire season, which is an if at this point, I think he's got all the potential and ability to absolutely be a Pro Bowl type of player.
Fourth down. What do you think the Seahawks are going to do, Jake, to make their defensive line go from the bottom of the league to the top?
It's very simple in the terms of Jadeveon Clowney, first off. All right, you have to get Clowney back, and I think that's a starting point for them. But outside of that, you can't just settle for getting Clowney. That's something you were essentially stuck with last year because Ziggy Ansah didn't perform the way you were hoping. So you have to find veteran proven presence and depth. And you look at Quentin Jefferson and Jaron Reed as guys that could maybe fill that depending on how their contract negotiations go on the free market. They're going to test the free market. They're going to see what they can get. But I would honestly, it sounds weird, but I think Quentin Jefferson might be a hotter name than Jaron Reed at this point. Jaron Reed has the higher ceiling and is the better overall player, but Quentin Jefferson, his versatility and what he was able to do, it'll be really interesting to see what the market's going to be like for him. But ultimately, signing one of those guys back would be great, and then getting a proven edge rusher, a very good football player, not someone who's coming off of injury, but someone who is really going to provide some great assistance to Clowney on the other edge through the pass rush, through the ability to stop the run, a great overall player next to him. I think that is going to be the key. So if you can get three of those guys, if you can get a proven veteran defensive end alongside Clowney and then have the ability to sign back either Quentin Jefferson or Jaron Reed, I think you're going to be in a pretty good position moving forward with how you round out free agency and how you handle the draft. You got to fill three of those spots.
Jake Heaps live from Orlando at the Pro Bowl. By the way, that game being played at UCF's home stadium, is that where it is?
Yes, that is correct.
That must be really cool for the Griffin twins to be out there.
Yeah, no kidding.
What kind of car are you climbing into, Jake?
It's a huge, good question.
Gloss is over
it. Just a little forward here. I look at this thing, and for Shaq Griffin and for Shaquem Griffin, this has been an unbelievable experience for them. And I do say Shaquem, even though he's not in the Pro Bowl, he is going through this whole process like he is a part of the Pro Bowl. It's actually pretty remarkable. Shaq and Shaquem are like tied at the hip, like they have been their entire lives. So very cool seeing there, enjoying it together as brothers. But it means a lot to them. It means a lot to them as a community. It gives them back to their roots. And I know they're doing a lot of special things outside of, you know, just going to practice in the Pro Bowl, but other stuff within the Orlando community as well. So this is a once in a lifetime experience for the Griffin brothers.
Jake, I know you're hanging out with a ton of famous, wealthy football players and really accomplished athletes and personalities, but do you kind of secretly miss me and Tom?
Of course. Yeah, of course I do. I can't wait to get back next week and get going on Monday with you guys. I'm not going to say that it hasn't been bad here, because I'd be lying to you. I will be at Universal Studios tonight. The entire Pro Bowl team and coaches and all that, they will all be there. And so that will be a really fun experience. But overall, it's just been really cool to see these guys in this element. And the Pro Bowl is something that, although it's been great experience for these guys, there's also been a lot of talk about how the weather here over the last 3 years just hasn't been great. And guys, it's raining right now. So
what?
The whole entire week, it's been 55. It's been rainy. The weather hasn't been spectacular. And I guess that's been a trend over the last 3 years. So look for the NFL to be making a move to take the Pro Bowl away from Orlando after they have one more year under the contract. But I would really think that they're going to try and figure out a way to move the Pro Bowl in the future.
Interesting.
Jake, take care, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Will do. All right, guys. Looking forward to it. Have a great rest of your show.
Bye, Jake.
You think Pete feels a responsibility down there to run his program? I mean, I'm not sure how much practicing they're doing, but whatever they are. I mean, he's talking about basketball hoops at meetings, etc., and other guys are responding, or at least some of them are, pretty well to that.
I was actually going to ask you if you think that Jake feels a responsibility to brag about us, but I like your question more.
If Jake feels the need to brag about us?
Yeah. You know.
To who?
I don't know, like important people. I know you're Russell Wilson, but I don't know.
Drew Brees, yeah. Michael Thomas.
Yeah. Hey, Michael Thomas, nice to meet you. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Tom and Stacy.
Halftime show is next. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You know, Stacy, we're up here in the broadcast booth, and we're looking down on the grounds crew, watching them get the field ready for 2020 here. And I told this to Bob and Graz many times when we've been out here. If this radio thing doesn't work, and like I just can't find a career anywhere, that's my backup plan.
That right there.
Yeah.
I can't stop watching. It's a guy driving, what do you even call it?
A lawnmower?
It's not mowing the lawn, though. It's creating tracks in the sand on the field.
It's like a cross between a lawnmower and a Zamboni.
Yeah, it's a field Zamboni.
Yeah.
I can't stop watching it. I've been watching for the entire time we've been on the show.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
It's hypnotic.
You can just watch in silence now.
We're here because the Mariners are having their pre-spring training luncheon, and there's a handful of players here. Of course, Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto, who are going to be catching up with it, too. We already did catch up with Justin Dunn. We were very, very impressed by him. We were impressed by his shoe game. Impressed by his ability to get out of a car and walk up to a golf course, although we didn't really get to see that.
We were just told about his honesty with his golf game, saying, you know what, the thing I'm best at is the initial impression.
Right.
Dressing like a golfer, and then after that, it all goes downhill.
I've never met anybody who loves playing golf who admits that they're terrible at it.
Oh, I'm really bad at it.
But you like playing?
Yeah.
Do you love it, though?
I really like going to the driving range.
Okay, well, that's different.
Yeah, I like that.
Because it would be really annoying to play with you.
It would be so... I can't tell you enough how annoying it is to play
Wait,
with me.
Why?
If she were really bad. Like, or anybody who's really bad. And like,
I am.
No, wait while I get this.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's okay to stink at golf. You just need to stink quickly.
Quickly.
Yeah. No, I'm going to
be
the really
as bad
annoying.
As you want, nope. just do it nope. quickly.
Yep.
Next. Mitch Haniger is going to miss the start of the season with a core injury that he sustained. I want to make sure I got this right. He sustained this during the surgery for his other injury?
I read it as a setback in his recovery from his other injury. But
Curtis, do you have that cut of that Jerry DePoto sound you had earlier? Maybe we just have him say it. Let us know when you do, because that we probably need to have an explanation of what caused this injury, when and why.
All right. We found out Monday night that Mitch had had a setback, and it's probably going to result in a core surgery that might cause for him to miss most or all of spring training and likely delay the start of his season. So this is all kind of coming together over the course of the last 40 hours or so. So it's still very fresh. But, you know, he's attacking it very aggressively because he doesn't want to miss any more time.
Yeah, so I'm interpreting that as an injury sustained in your rehabilitation of that surgery. That
Not like malpractice.
No, I don't know if it's... I'm not relating the two. I have no idea. But it's kind of like when guys have surgery for a knee and then maybe they mess up their opposite leg hamstring. There's just a corresponding injury.
Yeah, they favor
that
the other side.
Yeah, yeah. So it has something to do in response to that earlier surgery in his comeback, whether he was trying to come back too quickly, whether it was a freak injury and kind of one of those you're offsetting your balance and your strength and you just injure something else.
Just to clarify, the wording was, quote, the Haniger injury stems from the surgery to repair a ruptured testicle last season.
It says
so
it stems from it.
Huh. That's so weird.
Knee bone's connected to the thigh bone. I mean, what can I tell you?
Oh, man.
Well, I feel bad.
But that's a cornerstone of this organization I mean, as you project this season, we hear a lot about, hey, there's going to be these young guys coming up. We saw some last year. We'll see more this year.
You'll see
before
Jake
the All-Star break,
place.
After the All-Star break, September call-ups. But Haniger is the guy that you expect to be the cornerstone foundational piece from day one.
Mm-hmm. I bet you he's going to – I would bet a lot of money that he's not going to be on this team in 2 years.
Well,
2 years is one thing, but at least, I mean, the recovery time for this, talking this season.
But a cornerstone of your rebuilding,
I think it depends,
needs to be here in 2 years.
I think it depends how he comes along. I think you'd feel differently if he had a more productive 2019 season, but it was that the hype was so high, and him and Marco Gonzalez were seen as the two people you're building around. And then, you know, Marco Gonzalez was good, but up and down. And then Haniger was just injured. I mean, he couldn't get back out there.
I think you're right, Tom, that he may not be here in 2 years, but that's why this injury matters.
Yeah.
Is you need him to be able to get you something in return. So the longer this drags out, he missed three quarters of last year, this spring training, the start of this year. It just feels like with each missed game, each passing week, it just diminishes and diminishes.
I agree with that. All I'm saying is when I hear the word cornerstone, I guess I think corner outfielder who should be there for a long time. And probably won't. I mean, listen, you hear the way Jerry talked about in his press conference, Fraley and Braden Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Fraley may be a regular.
Bishop
may be just an extra outfielder.
It's making me nervous.
But as soon as we hear that Haniger's going to be out, it's like, oh, yeah, well, the door's open for these other two to slide right in. Wouldn't that be great?
I think play would potentially offset some of that. I think if Haniger comes back and has a monster year, it's a different kind of conversation. You're still wondering, no matter his age, even if he is a younger guy, he's going to be an older veteran on a team that's one of the younger teams in baseball, certainly in the AL West. And then, you know, but I think a monster year from him could change that conversation.
Monster
year.
Next. Eli Manning retired after 16 NFL seasons. Did he actually make his announcement yet?
It's supposed to. Oh, did it happen already today?
Maybe it did.
I know it was going to. Or not today. I thought it was going to happen Friday. That was the initial tweet from Field Yates.
Yeah, I mean, this news came down on our show late yesterday. And by the way, I didn't go home and cry.
I was wondering how you processed it.
So it wasn't like a Neil Peart moment?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I watched some of the highlights. SportsCenter actually had about three or four of his highlights put back to back, and I don't know. Maybe it's because I've seen him so many times. Not enough time has passed where I don't know. I feel like it's time. I feel like I'm happy he's retiring.
Yeah.
Because I don't want him to go out there on the field and get maimed anymore.
Eli Manning is, I don't think all Giants fans see it this way, but I think a lot of football fans see it as Eli Manning is the closest you could possibly get to being great without being considered one of the greats.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably. I was thinking about that.
Yeah. The closest you could possibly get. Two-time Super Bowl winner, two-time Super Bowl MVP, led the most successful time in a franchise, but I don't think people consider him a great.
If you go through your quarterback power rankings, for you got Mahomes 1, Wilson 2, Breeze 3, I don't know, whatever you want to do. What was the highest Eli ever got in QB power? He was never the best quarterback.
Probably six.
No, I was going to say top five, probably.
Top five. He played in a great era.
I think he's seventh all-time in passing yards. If we're just talking comparing stats to one guy to the next, he's probably top five in about 20, 10, yeah. 11, 12, okay. Right around there.
I was just thinking, is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? Well, he was never the best quarterback in the league. Was he a top three guy maybe for a year?
Yeah, but Curtis Martin was never the best running back in the league, and he's in there. I mean, that question, once it comes down to the voting, kind of goes by the wayside. Not valid.
Yeah.
It's not valid.
It's been invalidated.
Yes, by me.
Yeah. Well, for shame. Rick!
Who's that? Rick Riz coming in?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. One thing I will tell you, it's not just Giant fans that are trying to get Eli Manning into the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
It's not just them. I saw Mike Greenberg was defending him. I actually haven't defended him. When you have a record that's 117 and 117... I mean, that's kind of tough to defend.
Yeah.
When you're 500 like that. So, you know, I mean, I'm not sure. He's not a surefire Hall of Famer. Let's put it that way.
I think he's as close as you could get.
All right. We have a surprise guest that's going to join us in about 5 minutes.
Hopefully
here.
Kyle didn't spoil it.
Oh, you already said Rick Riz. Okay. Rick Riz is going to come on with us
Rick
next.
Rick Springfield.
Kyle screamed, Rick!
The voice of the Mariners joins us next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I said this many times on the air. When you're driving around at any point during baseball season and you flip on 710 and you hear Rick Riz's voice, regardless of how the team is playing, you always automatically feel a little bit better hearing Rick's voice. Whether you're storytelling or talking about what's actually happening on the field, you always feel a little bit better. Glad to have Rick Riz in here. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing fine, Tom. Great to see you, Stacy. Great to see
Good
you
to
as
see
well.
You.
Big day here.
A huge
at,
day.
At T-Mobile Park, you know, spring training media day. But thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Doesn't it feel a little bit different? We heard that, you know, T-Mobile, at the park itself, they're going to have a lot of additions to just the play, or the fan experiences around the stadium, etc. But, of course, we've got a brand new set of players that are going to be coming out here. How excited are you for that?
Very excited. I think Jerry did the right thing at the right time. You know, took a look at the ball club that was the oldest team in the American League after that 2018 season and said something has to happen here, and went out and traded a lot of veteran guys and came up with a bevy of young talent to really move this organization forward and in the right way. They were able to get a Jared Kelnick, you know, from the Mets organization in that trade for Robbie Cano and Edwin Diaz, and also a Justin Dunn. So there's the possibility of a starting outfielder in the very near future, along with a starting pitcher in the rotation. So, you know, I love what I see. I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. There's so much good talent in this organization right now moving forward. We had a chance to see a lot of young players last year, especially with Akiah Lewis coming up and showing what he did at the end of the year. You know, home runs in six of his first 10 games. He was so much fun to watch and Shed Long over at second base, played a little bit in the outfield. To see Sheffield come back after going from AAA to AA, then back to the big leagues, had the one appearance in April. Justin Dunn, and on and on and on, Jake Fraley. So I'm excited about spring training to see all these young players eventually get here to the big leagues, and they will.
We talked about some of the stuff that we learned from today's media luncheon. It's hard to think there's something you wouldn't already know about this team, but is there anything that was a pleasant surprise that you learned about the team this offseason?
Wow, that's a great question. I think it's just the anticipation of how good I think these young players are going to be. I had a chance to go down to Arizona in October, Stacey, and watch a few games in the Arizona Fall League and saw Julio Rodriguez. Mm. I heard all about this kid, 18 years of age, how good he was, how talented he was. And then I saw him run the bases and swing the bat. I go, wow, you know, this kid is going to be something special. I remember seeing Junior for the first time. I was broadcasting down in Anaheim. We just did an Angels game, and Ken Brett and I said, hey, you know, Bellingham's playing over in San Bernardino. Let's go see the kid play. And he was 17 when he signed. And we bought a ticket, sat on the third base side, and I watched Junior hit a double into the gap in left center field, and I went, wow, this is something special. I mean, he was on at second base like that. Then he makes his major league debut in 1989. We're in Oakland, and he's facing Dave Stewart. And in his first at-bat, rips a double, a drive into the gap in left center field, flying around first, goes into second base. And I looked at Dave Niehaus. I said, I saw this. I saw this before. I think we're going to be saying that with Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick and many, many other players and Logan Gilbert and George Kirby and all the other players that Jerry signed. I can't wait to see these kids play. So that's the thing that I really want to look for, Stace.
God, you're giving me chills just
I know, I was
just
going to say that sounds like it's kind of a rare feeling. Not that there aren't guys that you watch that are exciting, but that moment, it's hard to articulate when someone who watches every game day in, day out for years must think, this is someone special.
Yeah. I just have a vision in my mind of seeing Ken Griffey Jr. at the minor league level and what that must have looked like.
Yeah.
And then all of us, you know, seeing him up here. I mean, you know, we're in the phase now of this, we'll call it a reimagining. That's what Jerry DePoto has called it a couple of times, where a lot of the players are here. I mean, they've been traded for.
Yeah.
Some of them are at the major league level. Some of them are at the minor league level. But really, the next big thing that's going to happen while they're developing is, like he said today, when the time is right, going. They have a war chest of money and spending some money to add to what's here. So, I mean, we're pretty deep into this thing right now.
Exactly. And I like what Scott Servais said, I believe, on the program earlier today. Discipline is the shortcut. They have to be disciplined with the kids. When the kids are ready, they'll let you know. I liked what Andy McKay said to the media today. We need to challenge these kids. And they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle it, continue to struggle, A-ball, double-A, triple-A, and when they get here. But they're going to be able to figure things out. So when they get here, they know what kind of adjustments to make when they're facing Chris Sale and Justin Verlander, you know, and Scott Scherzer and all these other great pitchers, Gerrit Cole. So I'm really, really excited about the future. And really, the future is now. We're going to see these kids at spring training here in the next couple of weeks. And that's huge to be able to be in a big league spring training game. I remember how excited, you know, all the young players were to get an opportunity. We saw Julio Rodriguez play in a spring training game last year. So I'm really, really excited about this season, because it's going to be – the foundation was laid last year, and now it's a springboard this year into 2021 next year.
You know, you kind of just answered it, but I think I'm looking for just an answer. When we put out, Tom and I, our question on Twitter of, hey, what kind of questions do you guys have when we do our Mariners media luncheon – I think a lot of people had a general sentiment of, I'm a Mariners fan. I don't know how to watch a season when I know they aren't necessarily going to be in contention. I don't know how to watch a season that's in the middle of a rebuild. When you think about how you'll be watching, not as a broadcaster, but as a fan, how do you think you would be watching this season?
That's a great question. I think you're going to be watching. You have to watch it from a scout's point of view, from a player development point of view, knowing that we're going to have so many young players here. You know, are they going to win the division? Houston is still really, really good. They went through this whole process because they were really, really good a couple of years ago and ended up winning the World Series and going back to the World Series. So you have to look at it as a fan looking toward the future. Mm-hmm. It is going to get better. These kids are real. They have the talent. Have they done it yet? No, they're not here yet. You know, but we think so much, the organization thinks so much, Stacey, it's a great question, of Evan White. They gave him a 6-year major league contract with 3 more option years. That's what they think about this kid as a player and as a person. And Jerry DePoto said to the media earlier this morning that, hey, we're looking to do it maybe with somebody else too, you know, to be able to keep this thing sustainable year after year after year. So you have to look at it from a different, I think, viewpoint as a fan, knowing that, yeah, Houston is still really good and the other teams are still really good. This team is going to be really, really good in the near future. And what you're going to see out there are the stars that are going to get this organization back to the playoffs where we haven't been in a long time. But if you look at it that way and be a little bit more patient, that's the hard part. But we haven't been to the playoffs since 2001 when that banner up there says, you know, we won 116 games more than any team in the game of baseball. Without Ken Griffey Jr., without Randy Johnson, you know, without Alex Rodriguez, they put together a team. A great team. That's what Jerry DePoto is looking for right now. Build that core group of players. The Yankees had the core four, actually core five. I got to put Bernie Williams in there too. But that's what the Mariners are doing right now. Then he also said they've got that war chest. You know, they saved, you know, whatever amount of money by trading a lot of veteran players. When they're ready, they can add to this group. But this group is going to come together hopefully real soon.
Rick, very quickly before we run here, you mentioned 2001, and that's, of course, the last time they were in the playoffs. What would it mean to you personally just to broadcast a playoff game, three playoff games, whatever it ends up being?
Oh, my goodness.
Honest.
I would sit here and see Dave Niehaus right next to me, you know, because we've never been to the World Series. That's why I was glad the Washington Nationals won. They're the old Montreal Expos. There were only two teams that hadn't gotten to the World Series, the Expos and us. And that means, you know, I want to get there. You want to get there. The fans want to get there. We all want to get there together. And this is part of the process, the major part of the process right now that I think will put us on that path. And when we get there, I'm going to think about Dave Niehaus and all the games that he broadcast when during the lean seasons, you know, from 1977 until 1991. We didn't have a winning season, guys, for 15 years. And we finally won 82 games in 1991, finally got to the playoffs in 95. But this is the right thing to do. Like I said, Jerry did it at the right time to load up the organization. A couple of years ago, this was one of the worst farm systems in baseball. Now it's about the 10th or the 11th best. And I love what I see. I'm excited about this spring, next spring, and the next four or five springs.
Thanks for dropping by, Rick. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks.
Mariners GM Jerry DePoto joins us next, 710 ESPN Seattle.